Welcome to the Real Estate Dads podcast. We've got our special guest, Brandon Basic. Brandon is a real estate investor who is highly focused on analytics and data, and we're going to let him give us an introduction on where he is in the business and then talk about dad world. All right, Brandon, let's get an introduction from you.
Oh, man, I appreciate you. No, it's good to be here, and it's fun to talk to like-minded individuals because in our daily lives, you know, we take our kids to baseball practice or gymnastics or whatever, and most people, they don't think like us, most other adults. And so it's nice to have other colleagues that we can kind of unite with and have these fun conversations. So I appreciate that, Max.
Yeah, no, I love the dadness. You know, you and I had some original conversations talking about multifamily real estate, and we found out how we had some similar backgrounds. Both came from divorced parents. He's kind of split households growing up. And, you know, I can talk about myself a lot. Let's hear from you. And I'll jump in as
well. Yeah, so my parents, they did divorce young. I can't say it really affected me much. I mean, I had a lot of really good friends growing up, had really great dads that, you know, I played soccer. I was a big soccer fan, and I still love soccer, and had a great soccer coach, and, you know, really just tried to kind of, I guess, attach on to other people. But sometimes as a child, you don't realize that, you know, that you need a male role model. That you don't think of it like that. You just like, I like this person. I like this. He's my friend and his dad's cool. So you spend time with them, right? It's just kind of a natural form of the way of thinking. But yes, I did come up with that. And my wife, her mom and dad, they've never been divorced, and they had a great marriage, and her dad passed away not too long ago, actually. And my wife and I have a saying that, like, look, we have to stick this out for our children, because she can see some, you know, things in me because I didn't have a dad and stuff like that. And I think it's more evident from other people than I think ourselves, not in a negative way, but, like, you know, as you know, when my dad left, I just had to take on other roles and responsibilities as a much younger age than most kids. So I know in myself, and just kind of talking just very freely here, is I'm very systematic. I'm always pretty serious. I'm always real serious. If you talk to a lot of my friends and close relatives and stuff like that, I don't put my guard, I don't let my guard down too much, because ever since I was little, I always had to work or had to do this or had to do that. I didn't get a chance to let my hair down, right? And in school, I worked as many hours as I could to pay for my school. Then I went to class, right? So I didn't have a normal college where I went to, you know, I went and partied. I didn't party. That's not what I did. I mean, I was very serious. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to go to medical school. I had visions. I had a goal for my life, and I was just very, you know, I needed to prove to myself, and I think potentially maybe even prove to others that I could do it.
And so, and this is even some new information I didn't hear before. I didn't know when we talked before. So your parents divorced, but your dad actually left.
Yeah. So my dad left. He was not a faithful husband. You know, obviously being the age, you know, Max, you and I are around the same age, and our kids are the same age now. I mean, just speaking honestly, I mean, it's in today's world, it's, you know, it can be hard to be a faithful partner. I mean, you have to be committed and say, like, I'm not going to do this. It's work. Like it's not like we all know. I mean, people on the other end of this, if they're listening to this, they know what I'm talking about. They know that it's like we could be very easily tempted to do certain things, but you have to have a vision for your life and a goal for your life and what you want, not only for yourself, but for your family. And you have to be committed.
No, I completely agree. You know, and I wanted to pull this up right now. I happen to have just gotten into a debate with someone just this week, and it was very specifically on whether or not monogamy was the best thing for kids. You know, was that, you know, and some people were arguing, no, it's not necessary. And their argument was lots of kids are raised from, you know, divorced households. Look, it happens all the time, and they're raised. And I kind of have this sense of kind of like, well, yeah, you could have a kid be a ward of the state, you know, not have parents at all, and they'll get raised. You know, it's not a question of if they'll get raised. And, you know, and I actually looked up some statistics on how many, you know, what it looked like to have fatherless households and how bad it actually was for these kids. And some of these stats were absolutely mind-boggling. And, you know, and I'm so glad that you, you know, took, you know, what you did in regards to, sorry, I'm looking for this.
Hey, sorry, right here. I think we also know from, you know, when you experience it and then you look backwards, things, you know, the dots connect a little bit more looking backwards. But at the same time, like, we realize what we went through, and then we make an internal decision that if I would have had more control, I wouldn't want to do that over. I would have done it differently, and then I don't want it for my kids.
That's accurate. These are some of those stats I want to just mention since we're talking about this. And I did not plan on this when we jumped into this this podcast this morning. But 63% of youth suicides, fatherless homes, 90% of homeless and runaway children, fatherless homes, 85% of children show behavioral disorders, fatherless homes, 80% of rapists with anger problems come from fatherless homes, 71% of high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. You know, the stats are really staggering. And, you know, my dad was always around for you. I'm glad that you're not one of those statistics, you know, and I'm glad that you had this view of recognizing how, I'll call it the difference that you want to do for your kids versus the other.
Yeah. I mean, I would call that a godly moment, just to be frank, and that, you know, people bring ideas into my life at a younger age. And I was like shadowing doctors at a young age, and the things that I was looking at and I was surrounded by were just different than maybe some of these statistics that you just did. Like, my mom put me in contact with other people that allowed me that opportunity. And I just think so many kids that potentially not even in just so many children these days, it doesn't matter if it's a fatherless home or not, they're just not given the opportunity to experience something to give them a say, I might want to do that, or I like that. And then they're lost, and then they're out searching for something, and then bad things happen. You know, they can get up with the wrong crowd. So I guess I'm blessed that I found something that I kind of attached to as a young age.
And what was that you attached to?
Probably more the medical side of things. I became just a little personal, and I don't mind being personal on this stuff at all. So I actually became a type 1 diabetic very young. And man, I was a pissed off teenager, I can tell you that. Just because I was mad. It's just mad that this is happening to me. And, you know, I think my mom told me, she's like, look, you know, these are the cards you dealt. You can either piss it away, or you can accept it and you can run with it. And so that's really where I got interested in medicine. It's like, okay, well, if I've got this thing, I might as well understand it. And that's what really got me very focused in medicine, because it became a cool obsession. I mean, the body's really, really cool, that because of one little islet cell in an organ that we have, something happened, and we believe is a viral type of an event that happened that killed some cell. Now this is the result of that. And it's like, interesting. Well, you know, and then it's like, look at all these other things. And so, you know, in high school, I worked in the pharmacy. I worked as a pharmacy tech in high school. So that's what I did for 30, 40 hours, you know, a week in high school. Right.
Yeah. I had no idea you had this medical identity.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, and it still sucks to this day. I take very good care of myself. I exercise, I eat right. You know, I let it become a positive, not a negative. But we all have shit that happens in our lives that I think we have to choose. Are we gonna be a victim of it, or are we just gonna take control of it? So, but again, I mean, I fought, you know, I still get pissed off because, you know, I mean, if I go somewhere, I'm going to drag a Sunkist around. You know what I mean? I mean, like just little stuff like that.
So yeah, I didn't realize you had this, this medical affinity. So, you know, I know you told me about the being diabetic, but I didn't realize you'd want to become a doctor. So there was a shift in here when you went, hey, doctor to, you know, real estate investor.
Yeah. So I'll tell you that story real quick. I got accepted to medical school, and I was just kind of infatuated with it for a very long time. And have you ever wanted something so bad? You work, and then you're given the opportunity, and then you're not excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's most careers.
that's kind of what happened. I thought that's what I wanted, and I wasn't excited about it at all. So I knew internally I had to look for something else. So I worked for, I worked in the pharmacy for a long time, understand medicine very, very well. Even to this day, I still understand it very, very well. I follow it. And so I worked for Pfizer for many years. I was a legal drug dealer. That is what I did for many years. And I wasn't brought up as an entrepreneur at all. And so my path, I needed a little more certainty in my entrepreneur adventure starting out. And so I started one of my mentors, and kind of going backwards a little bit, you know, I was given the opportunity to be around certain people that changed the way I was thinking. And my father-in-law, one of his best friends, his name was Donnie. Donnie was a real estate attorney, but he didn't practice law. He owned hundreds of mobile homes. And so I noticed this was my rich dad, poor dad experience. And I would travel a lot with my wife and her family when we were dating. And Donnie would come along and his family. But my father-in-law, his name was Mel. And Mel always had to work. So he was a real estate appraiser. So he always had to work and then we could go play. But Donnie never worked and all he did was play. And I just didn't understand that. I was like, why is it that my mom's working and Mel's, but you don't have to work. And, you know, and I'd sit in a hot tub and Donnie and just, I start asking him questions. And he's like, look, I bought this and, you know, it pays me this much every month. And so I just had to piece everything together in my own way. So I started buying mobile homes. This was my adventure. And I was a pharmaceutical rep. I made decent money. I was buying mobile homes for several thousand. I was fixing them up and I was selling them to mobile home park owners that needed to place homes in their park. And I got to know these people because I was selling them home after home after home, right? And I was making, I wasn't killing it, but I was probably making $2,000 to $4,000 a home and maybe doing, you know, less than 10 or 12 a year. And so some of these guys were like, man, you're killing yourself. Why don't you buy a mobile home park? I had no idea about how to run that. Donnie Lynn, so I talked with him a lot. Donnie kind of showed me how to do it a little bit. And I found one of my closest friends that was in Pfizer. He had more income. He had more capital. So I found a mobile home park and I went to him and I said, let's partner up. You put up the money and I'll do all the work. And so we did. So he put up several hundred thousand dollars. We bought a mobile home park. So that was my entrance into real estate. Really, it was on the commercial side.
And what year was that?
2008.
Okay, so how old were you then?
Oh, shoot. So what is that? So that's 12, 15 years ago. I'm 42.
Okay, great. So, and you know, this is something I know that listeners are wanting to hear. So let's hear about the portfolio now. So, you know, that was the first deal. You know, we've heard a little bit about, you know, needing to get some... Trevor, we can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you. Right over the talking. No, but we can hear you. You still sound super faint. You still sound like you're just kind of whispering in the back a little bit.
Hey, Trevor. So I started in the commercial space, and just to finish the story, and I'll get into exactly where I'm at today. Max is, and Dwight and I are shifting a little bit right now, and I'll tell you exactly why. I was still lost. I really was. Like, I bought this thing. It's like, okay, what's the next thing now? So I went and got my master's. I went and got my MBA. Okay, because I just didn't know the next step for me. And while getting my MBA, I really realized that I wanted to work for myself. I was not a corporate America material. I'm not from that. I wasn't meant to do that. And I had the flu really bad one year for like literally 3 days straight. And this was in 2009 or 10 or something. And I watched literally these flipping shows of how to flip houses. They were reruns for like 3 days straight. And at the end of that, I said, I'm going to do that. I can do that. I can 100% do this. And it was Fan Merrill and Paula Sagan. Those were the people I watched. So I looked them up and I saw they owned a company called Fortune Builders. So I went and I went to some of their classes and I just studied. Remember, I'm a doctor, but my mindset is medical. So I said, I'm not going to do anything. Let me study. So I studied and I read and I did everything for probably 6 months to a year. And they said, if you do these things, you'll find your first flip. And I followed exactly what they said to do. And I found my first flip and I found my construction. I just did everything they told me to do. And I made $5,000 on my first flip. I was ecstatic just because I just made it through the process because I didn't know. I had to borrow money from my stepdad. I didn't know anything. I dove in, but I had the confidence of studying to know that I could actually do this. And I told myself I could do it. So I met Dwight. I met Dwight during that process. And that was over 14 years ago. And Dwight and I have the same vision, mindset, and goals for what we've wanted in our lives. And but he was just cut from a different cloth. He's visionary. He's more CEO. He's high level. He's marketing. He's more dispositions. And I liked construction and acquisitions. And we just liked the different things. And we said, let's partner on a deal or two and see what happens. So now you can really fast forward. We've done a lot together. I mean, Dwight and I, over the last 12 years together, we have legitimately, and I mean this legitimately, we have legitimately wholesaled probably 800 houses or more, flipped probably 450 to 490 single family homes in Dallas, Texas. We've borrowed over $400 million. We're a systems and processes. So I would have 12 rehabs going on at all times. It was systems, process. I knew I had everything dialed in. And around that time, we were paying multiple six figures in taxes. We were growing as individuals and growing as entrepreneurs. We were paying six figures in taxes. We knew there, like, we're like, okay, there's something to this. We've got this down. We were wholesaling stuff, but we were like, there's got to be a better way. So we knew that we needed help. So we found Kent Clothier in the Boardroom Group, which Max, you're very familiar with. And we needed mentors to really show us that there's an evolution to becoming or to potentially being a real estate investor. And I didn't know it, but we've had crossed all of those boundaries. And this was before COVID, but Dwight and I made a decision right before COVID that, like, we weren't happy. We were working 70, 80 hours a week. We were killing ourselves. We were making decent money. We were paying high taxes. And we're like, we're not building wealth. We're on a hamster wheel. There's got to be a better way. So we sat down with Kent Clothier. We sat down with Sean Terry. We sat down with a lot of the higher up groups at Boardroom. And they're like, you know, they gave us some things to really think about, some opportunity matrix and stuff. And so we really realized that we made all of our money buying and holding rental properties, cash flow from rentals. And we said, okay, I mean, we had all the data because we had rentals here in Texas. So we sold all of our rentals here in Texas. We cashed out over $1 million. We had called all of our hedge funds that were buying our wholesale deals in Texas, all of them. And we said, where are you? Why are you not in Texas anymore? And they're like, because you can't cash flow in Texas anymore. The taxes are too high. Insurance is too high. Like, we're in the Sunbelt regions. We're in Alabama. We're in Georgia. We're in north parts of Florida. We're in North Carolina. And we're in Kentucky. We're in Ohio. We're in all these up markets. Well, shit, that's where we need to go. Not ever buying one house outside the state of Texas. So fast forward 3 years, Dwight and I bought 100. We have 171 rental properties in five different states. And we made a lot of mistakes, Max. I have more. We don't have enough time to tell you all the things I did wrong.
We all have the stories,
you know. But, you know, fast forward, we have a multi, probably close to over $10 million of equity in our single family portfolio. And we hit a wall. We hit a wall very, very hard. And again, I can get into that if you would like. But we have that portfolio, but now we are shifting as a company because now we have decided, we had another evolution of who do we want to be when we grow up? Because now Dwight has kids. I have kids. I can't be traveling all the time. I don't want to travel all the time. And owning 171 rental properties is operational hell. It really is. So we're building up a team. So now it's like, who do we want to be when we grow up? And that's where we are 14 years later. So I'll pause for a second because I know you got thoughts and questions.
You know, it's funny. The pause right now, Trevor. Brandon, can you hear him?
I cannot.
Okay. So the question was, what's next? You got all these homes. You don't want to travel so much. You got kids.
Yeah. So as an entrepreneur, you really have to ask yourself, what business am I in? What business am I really, really in? And then what business do you want to be in? And how does that correlate to what you're good at? Like, what's your zone of genius? What are you great at? Okay. So Dwight and I have been working for the last 18 months at this. And what we decided was we are good at marketing and acquisitions. No doubt. Probably, hands down, probably one of the best. We've done it in multiple facets. You know, we've owned mobile home parks. I didn't get into this, but we did buy a few apartment complexes during that time. They were smaller because we're self-funded. Dwight and I are 100% self-funded. You know, we would borrow hard money, borrow from private individuals, but we'd never raised capital. And we knew to get to the goal and to do the things that we wanted, we had to change our mindset from marketing for the deal and then go raise the money to marketing for the money and then go find the deal.
That is the game.
That's the game. Because we were tired of going and kissing ass to everybody to raise capital. And we said, if we are going to be good in this, we have to have control of capital. We have to control the capital. And we had never raised a fund, never done a syndication, borrowed over $400 million privately and from hard money, but never individually done it. So we basically put together our pitch deck and we've talked to a lot of our lenders and we've opened our first fund. We are raising our first fund right now. And in that fund, we are going to buy multifamily assets. We are going to buy mobile home parks. We will probably lend some money because sometimes you just have money just sitting there that's dormant and you don't want that in a fund. And so like that's fund number one. We're very interested in fund to funds because just like you, Max, you're very good at networking and stuff. Dwight and I are very good at marketing and acquisitions. And Dwight is an amazing networker of people. And we are pitched on a monthly basis ideas of, you know, hey, I need $1 million. I need $2 million for this. And like, really, if we control the capital, we can surround ourselves with great operators like ourselves because we are great operators. We know how to vet the deal. We know what questions to ask because we've made all the mistakes. We've paid for every mistake imaginable. We haven't made every mistake, but we have a lot more to learn. But at the end of the day, we have a very good track record personally, and we're very good stewards of money. And I want to go buy some cool stuff. I really do, you know, and I want to do some cool stuff with some cool people because at the level that we're at now, it's like, who do you want to do life with? Right? Like, let's go raise capital because the people we raise capital, they need us. They need us to put their capital to work, to help double their money or give them a good IRR or give them a good interest rate or whatever. So we are leveraging our portfolio and from a debt perspective, but we're going to be setting up another fund to do fund, like fund to funds, another 506C and start because we realize that we don't want. We're an asset management company now, Max. We're a capital raise company and an asset management company. So who do we want to be when we grow up and what business are we in? We're a capital raise company with an asset management team so that if we ever had to, like our asset management team takes care of our current assets and basically our portfolio, but we have good underwriters now. And I know, Max, you're an excellent underwriter and you know that's one of my things I'm working to get better at. But we're surrounding ourselves with people that are good underwriters because we're also looking at buying businesses right now because there are so many businesses. I mean, there's car washes out there, right, that you own the real estate. And there's people that don't know how to operate this stuff like we do. And so we're trying to be very open-minded and not just focus on, let's go market for one multifamily asset. While we are doing that, because we have our buy box, we also know that there's a lot of great opportunities and great operators that we want to work with and we want to be a part of. That's kind of how we're shifting. So we're still going to be operators, but we're also going to help other operators do great things.
It really hopefully adds to you being home with the kids more, is if you're able to not have to be at 171 properties in how many states?
It's five different states.
Five different states.
But here's what's cool, Max. Here's what's cool. My son was off on spring break and I had to go to Alabama and he's 4 and a half and I took him with me. And I kid you not, that kid had more fun. He had more fun going in houses and picking up nails and 2x4s. And like, you know, I walked him through, you can go on my Facebook page and you can see a video I did. And I was showing him all the plumbing and the PECs and all the wiring and the electric box and get him to see without the sheetrock on. We were working 14-hour days. It was 7 p.m. at night and we started at 7 a.m. And he goes, what's the next house, Dad? And I'm like, buddy, I'm tired. let's go eat.
So, Brandon, I got a question.
Yep.
Does your four-year-old fly first class also?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
So let's hear the story. First class only. I want to hear it.
So I'm blessed to be executive platinum. And so, you know, his dad still comes from humble beginnings. And so I, you know, flying from Dallas to Alabama, you know, to fly first class is like $1,200 per person, right? For an hour and 10 minute flight. So dad's a little cheap on that, but dad also knows which flights to pick where I will naturally be upgraded. So, you know, I pick the early, I like the early morning flights. I get up early. I take action. So, go ahead.
But what I want to hear is the philosophy. And Trevor's got a question here. I want to hear it in a second. But I loved your philosophy on, hey, this is why I fly first class. That's what
my son and I, we go to Montana every year to see my dad, and we fly first class. Everywhere we go, I try to fly first class so that he doesn't understand it yet. But it's when you give yourself permission to do that, and then you don't want to sit in the back because it's uncomfortable and someone's sitting there and sweaty and you're hot and it's just uncomfortable. Like, it gives you that extra pep to work harder, right? It gives you the other to want more.
Yeah, it reminds you there's more. And for people who are listening, you know, Brandon is a you meet him. He's a humble, salt of the earth individual. So, you know, just as I'm saying this, the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's a little bit of one of those, I'll call it the few luxuries that it seems like Brandon allows himself, despite the fact that he has quite a bit of assets under management. So, and then the question we've got from Trevor, how much money have you raised since starting your first fund?
So we started the fund less than 6 months ago. It's a $15 million fund. And I think we're raising until we hit a tranche and then we draw. So we're right at $1 million right now. So we are very much learning, Max, how to raise capital. We're not the best at it, but we're getting better. And the reason why I was just on the phone with my attorney prior to this meeting is because we have a 506C and there's rules around advertising and what you can say, and it can't be considered investment advice. And, you know, so how do we strategically market that? Because we're great marketers, right? So how do we take our marketing and acquisition strength and turn it into a capital raise funnel?
Absolutely. And the people who are good at that are, it builds year over year over year.
It does. Correct.
And what you're talking about is even some of these things, because, you know, what I love about hearing your story is, you know, you're doing these things that I want to be doing in regards to the analytics and the marketing. I mean, you have a team. You're talking about actually having a team. You know, we're still building those things out on our side. Well, and on the capital raise, what I will say is that right now, just saying, it's hard right now.
It is very hard.
You know, guys who are cutting their teeth, you know what? There's guys in the industry been around for 20 plus years. This right now is still a cutting your teeth time in the industry, figuring out how to raise money when there's really not a lot of deals available to be sold. There's not. It is thin. It is thin in regards to offerings. A lot of owners who are owners of real estate, they're not sellers because the pricing doesn't match, you know, and it might not for a while. I mean, a lot of guys are talking about the stay alive till 25. And I know other guys who are looking at it going, like, including myself, it might be 26 until things balance out or until things kind of catch up, I'll call it. So, you know, and I think that's also on my side, what we really look at as the paddling forward. You know, everything we're doing is future planning. You know, we know things are slim right now, but we also know that we are paddling into the next cycle of real estate wealth, really. And creation, because, you know, there's a lot of people talking about how much money's been sucked out of the market right now due to the Fed increasing of rates. But I'll tell you, the government, the Fed, is printing money like crazy. We are in a couple different proxy wars. We have millions of people who've come over the border. They need to be stabilized. I've talked about this on several other podcasts. There's a lot of stuff going on in the U.S. we need to have stuff addressed to, you know, and they're talking about where inflation is. And there's those of us who are in the industry going, they are so off with how they think the inflation is low right now. I mean, it is completely being held down by high interest rates massively.
I know. I agree with you.
Yeah. So, you know, for the next 2 years, I mean, it's going to be thin, but I think everyone recognizes that, you know, all the work done now is when, you know, truly going to pay off in regard to those seasons. So, Brandon, in regards to, you know, just going back to being a dad, okay. So you're an entrepreneur. And your mom, which, you know, hearing the story, what I really love hearing about this also is that your mom actually kind of recognized that your dad wasn't around, and she intentionally got you engagement from mentor type guys.
That's right.
And was your stepfather someone who was one of these individuals, or was he, or did he qualify?
So my stepdad, my mom never remarried, but she's dated a guy for many, many years, and he's like a dad to me. My kids call him Pepe, and My first flip, Max, he loaned me the money.
Okay, so we got Trevor back, which I'm so glad, because we need some balancing of just me. Brandon, keep going. Stepdad, your mom didn't remarry, but had this guy, and he lent you your money for your first flip, and keep going.
Yeah, and he just, you know, he's a stress engineer. He designs airplanes, and he made decent money, and he saw me doing certain things, and, you know, and I talk with him about where I'm going, and nobody taught him about, you know, my parents and him. Now they're at the age of thinking about retirement, and, you know, no, he just wasn't prepared for retirement, didn't really save up for it, and didn't understand. So one of the things I did for him, this was many years ago, and he still owns some houses, I told him to buy some houses in Dallas. This was back in 2012. And I actually sold him one of my houses, Max. And I sold him the house for $110,000, and it's worth over $380,000 now. And, you know, and every now and then, I mean, I remember him calling me back in 2012, 2013. I got to put a $10,000 roof on this thing, and my insurance is up. And now he doesn't say anything, except he has probably close to $700,000 or $800,000 of equity in these homes I told him to pay for, with the debts at like 2.5% to 3%. You know what I mean? And, you know, so now he has the ability to sell and kind of retire. So I taught him a little bit, just wasn't intentional. I just wanted him to be involved because he was helping us. And so, you know, and that's just, I know that's not what this is about, but that's part of my passion of just instilling in people that I know. You know, one of the things that I tell Dwight all the time, I think the next level for me is going to be a fulfillment thing. I want to give back, and I want to teach and coach. And I don't know what that's going to look like yet. I really don't know, but I want to tell other kids and, you know, not only my kids, but other children and other adults that there's a better way besides going to college. Like, the number one question I get from family is, where's Brooks going to go to college? Where's Marin going to go to college? And my response to them, I don't know if they're shocked by it, is I don't care if they go to college. Now, if they want to work for me, I will, you know, I will. So I've set up, one thing I did for my kids is I set up, and I told my wife, and she's like, I cannot believe you did that much. But it's really important to me. So I set up a very large whole life insurance policy that I can draw from myself. But when my kids are 18, they will be millionaires. Absolutely, both of them will be. So if they want to draw from that, they'll have the ability to start a business, buy a rental property, whatever they want to do. Like, I get emotional because nobody did that for me.
It's real shit. It's real.
And not to be callous, like, that's an incredible thing. I'm just curious if, like, you have any concern about them being given $1 million that they never worked for at a very young age.
So I set up a trust, and I could, it's funny. So when they're 18, like, if I'm gone, I've set up my attorney to basically be like responsible for them. So if they want money, it says in there, they have to give them a business plan. They can't withdraw.
Yes. And the attorney judges whether or not it's a
That's correct. Plan. They cannot draw the money in full until they're 30 something, because when they're 20, they're not smart enough to do it. So they can borrow the money at 20, but they can't take the money until they're emotionally mature. Also, if they want money, they have to take a drug test. It says that they have to take a drug test. So I will not enable them. I will. So the money's not meant to enable.
That's smart.
To propel.
Man, Brandon, that's such a, like, head start you're giving them too, and that's a smart way to do it, man.
They're not going to know it. They're not.
So they don't know that they have $1 million.
No, my son's 4.5, and my daughter's almost 3.
are you going to wait until they're like their 18th birthday and be like, here you go, here's some documents?
Well, no, not really. We're just not going to tell them. But if they want to start a business, I'm going to say that, you know, mom and dad have set some money back for you to basically, you know, invest in you. So if this is what you want to do, and, you know, if I'm alive, they're going to give me business plans and business proposals. They're coming to me, right? You know, and if they want to invest in something, like, I just don't know. Like, you know, I might own 200 car washes, and my son might say, I want to own one too. It's like, okay, well, let's go find one together. it's about, you know, like when I travel, I want Brooks and Marin to come with me so they can see what I do. And if they choose to do that, you know, then they at least know how to do it. Like my daughter, my son's really, really smart, but they might watch this one day. I don't know. But my daughter, she's 3 years old and she's bright. She's really, really bright. And she's going to be one to like, she's going to be a force to reckon with. And so, you know, I want them to have the opportunity. Because no one else, we all know in this world, no one gave us anything. So we had to fight for it, right? And I'm going to make them fight for it. Like, one thing, I'm not a Dave Ramsey fan, but I am a Dave Ramsey fan in the term of, like, when Brooks and Marin wants a car, if they're even driving by then, and we have flying cars, I don't know. But they have to go work, and whatever they want to put up, I'll match, right? But I'm not going to just go buy a car. So we have to instill work ethic in them as well. And, you know, and I work a lot. I work a lot. And, you know, Max, I know you just had a little one. And you're one day, and if they haven't already, my son says, Daddy, do you have to work today? You know, so I get those questions now.
So I just had to do some Googling on this as people watching this to see that Max looked like he checked out for a second. Brandon, you know, the what you touched on in regards to, you know, doing some of your kids that no one ever did for you. I mean, I think that's really the crux of, you know, being a dad, because it's not just, and my grandfather said this to me, he goes, I want, and my grandfather on a side note, I mean, like, he was effed up, you know, but he raised my mom and he wanted my mom to do better than he did. And he said, you know, and I want you to do better than your parents and, you know, and you're going to want your kids to do better than you. And every one of those statements is true, no matter at what point they were at, you know, that was a true statement. And, you know, and I think that's, you know, a call the really end goal for people who are being dedicated on the father side, in regards to the estate planning, which is what you're kind of describing with this, you know, amount of money your kids are going to need to learn. And I just learned this, and I had not known about this until recently. But the story of the Rockefellers versus the Vanderbilts. You familiar with this?
I've heard. I know. Yes, yes, I have. I don't know which part, but yes.
So the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts were at one point in time both massively wealthy families. But the Rockefellers had estate planning that had heavy, heavy stipulations for the heirs and how they could use the funds and how they were only able to live off of the annuity income that was generated off of the assets, the dividends, versus the principal source of income, compared to the Vanderbilts, who did not. And the Vanderbilts have, as far as the family has gone, has had massive, massive decreases in wealth as a result of that. And so I think that's fantastic that, you know, your plan is to really have education for your kids, potentially forced at that age, you know, whenever that time comes.
Well, it also forces us. I mean, these are big checks I'm writing every year to put into those things. And when January 1st comes around, I'm like, shit, you know, like, you know, and it's sometimes it's tough because the first of the year is always tough, you know, right after Christmas and all that stuff. But my mom likes to spoil the kids, and I tell them, like, at Christmas, they don't need another toy. They don't need this. Like, give me money and let me invest it for them. Like, I'm very good with money. I'm a very good fiduciary because I wasn't given anything. I had to, like, get to where I'm basically at today.
You know, it's funny you say that. I was just having this internal debate recently where I thought, this is real. You know, Max, are you really a great investor or are you just a really great worker? But being a great investor requires actually having a whole other job. Because, you know, you work in operations, you work in real estate, you're working in raising capital. And of course, we put money into our deals. Part of me goes, God, could I just give my money to Brandon? Just make all the money. I'll just give it to Brandon. He'll put it away for me. Then I'll take it out later. Later. Because that's the...
Yeah, that's the end game.
I mean,
for sure.
I've found that the thinner I am with money in the bank, the more successful I am.
I agree with that statement so wholeheartedly.
The less money I got in the bank, the more money I got out growing, seeds planted, I am better. I am in the corner. I am fighting my way out successfully. But that's just been always the better way to do it. And time that I have, like a lot of money in the bank, it's
it's lacking the tooth of growth.
You know, comfortable. It's correct. So, yeah, no, I love everything you've said. And I guess one question I've got is life insurance. Is it everything's cracked up to be? Or are you able to borrow money against it, not pay taxes. I mean, you see all kinds of stuff on the internet about whole life insurance policies where you can do these things.
It's a very specific type of a life insurance. No, you can't go to like New York Life and do this, but I work with Mass Mutual, but Mass Mutual has certain things to where it's, you can actually take your, like a death benefit early as a loan is really what is. Now you can pay it back or you don't have to pay it back.
Is it a ULI or a VULI?
You're getting over my head. So I work with several individuals that have, that I've met through masterminds on all this stuff. And there's, there's so many of them. I'm not big on like giving names. The guy that set mine up, he did a great job for me, but I know like five people that do this now.
Look, right? Trevor, help us out. So those are some acronyms. There's a universal life and
Universal life and variable universal life. And the answer to your question, Max, for me is yes, because I have three life insurance policies. I'm with you on the life insurance game, Brandon. Like, you can become your own bank. It's all true. Everything they've said, it's all true.
This is an entire podcast we could do on life insurance. I'm dead serious. We could have another conversation where we just have people go, hey, you know, I just want to learn about this.
So, but you have to control the money. It's like a self-directed IRA. I'm a better fiduciary of my money, so I put it in a self-directed. And I lend out of my self-directed IRA.
So do you have a self-directed whole life insurance policy too?
Well, so part of the life insurance policy is I have the ability to be my own bank. I can withdraw the money. So one of the guys that teaches this, and the way his premise is this: if you want to go buy a car, borrow with your money and pay your self-interest. Don't go to Bank of America. You know, or don't go to your credit union, borrow money from your policy, pay for it in cash, and then pay yourself the interest back.
Yeah. Yeah. Once the policy is big, once the cash value is big enough, then yeah. Yeah. But you can put, there's almost no limit to how much money you can put into these things, Max. And then you can, and they earns interest tax free. You can draw all of it out without paying a penalty.
As a loan.
And you never. As a loan, but that you never have to pay back as a practical matter.
And it's still earning and it's still earning interest, because the reason you can take it out is, from what I understand, and I'm not a life insurance salesman or broker or anything like that, but you're taking out part of your death benefit early.
Early. And you're not taxed on it when you take it out?
No, because it's a loan.
It's a loan. Interesting. And you don't pay it back because you die, and that's when it gets paid back.
Something along those lines. Yes.
You still have to keep paying in. You still have to keep paying in every year. And then at the end, when there's an estate.
But you could not make the, it's like you can defer the payments. You can just be like, oh, I can't make the payment this month. And so the loan balance that you owe yourself just like gets bigger.
Mm.
And you can almost do that indefinitely. Yeah. And then one day you die and whatever you owe is subtracted from the death benefit.
Max, if you would like, I can connect you with two people that I really like if you want to have a much better conversation.
I would love to have the conversation. The reason I'd love to have the conversation is really for the listeners. I mean, I'm interested in learning about this, but I happen to know I'm not alone in people who hear this and they go, how does this really work? How much money am I putting out? What am I talking about? Because the whole like plan of us giving our wealth to our kids is, I mean, that is a super, I mean, that's what it's all about.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, it's all about. So so I'm definitely, I would love that contact. Absolutely.
Yep, I will text you. I'll make an intro.
Great. So, all right, Brandon, we've talked about so much stuff. Let's talk about some more of the salacious topics. Trevor, do you have anything you want to cover in real estate, or you want to go over public schools, wars, gun laws? Anything else we want to cover before we go into the heavy stuff?
I'm open to any of them. I mean, I know you're talking about the war in Israel or Palestine. Earlier,
you know, the war in Palestine, I wish I had a better commentary. I just have nothing. You know, I shouldn't say commentary, just insight. Like, I just feel so ignorant about.
It reminds me of one thing, you know, like on the one hand, like for sure 1,200 dudes went into Israel and like kidnapped and raped people, and they're just thugs and they should be killed, my opinion. On the one hand, as far as like who's responsible for the strife between the two, though, it just reminds me of like 2-3-year-olds and like trying to decipher. That are in a fight, and it's like trying to figure out who started it is pointless.
And it's going to keep going on for many years.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I guess maybe a bigger topic I'd like to just wonder, you know, ask about is, you know, what are your guys' thoughts upon the freedom of speech, you know, kind of debate in society right now? you know, hate speech is hate speech, free speech.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't like the hate speech, but I just think
I also would suggest though that if Facebook censors you, that is not abridging your free speech either. Like no one has the right to post their opinions on someone else's website. Even if it's a really big popular website, it's their website. It's not yours.
That's an interesting take. Well, but what if it's publicly traded and you're in a stock owner? You own the stock still now?
No, I'd say no, because I mean, when you buy stock, you're not even a limited partner, right? Your rights are very restricted to financial rewards. That's it.
I can understand that. So that's kind of like, you know, you say whatever you want, but if you don't own the megaphone, you can't. It doesn't matter. You can yell it, just no one's going to hear it.
But it's when the government intervenes that your freedom of speech is abridged. That's it. You know, the freedom to say what you want, to advertise what you want, to control the speech on platforms you own, that's free speech.
Have you heard about this in Canada with how much they actually are impacting free speech?
No.
Canada's having a rough time. They've actually had government laws that have come out that have actually, podcasts is one of the ones that they've actually zeroed in on.
Well, they're communists, so of course they're having a hard time. That's what.
Have you heard about Canada? No, not at all. But they're communists. Yeah, they're having problems for it, for sure. Well, you know, Brandon, you're the guest. We could, you know, Trevor and I could go back on some of these things. Are there any hot buttons that you just see in society right now that you're like, hey, look, I want to pay attention for my kids for the future, because, you know, I don't like the way things are going right now. And this is something that's, you know, I'm kind of, I'll call it newly passionate or triggered about. And if your answer is no, nothing, I'm just head down and will be a great dad, that's also a good answer. Because I'll argue that that's something that we say we wish. I mean, personally, I wish I did that a lot more.
I'm scared to death for my children and what they're going to have to face. I do not like government interference in certain things. The government gets in, and every business the government's owned has gone bankrupt, and they have to print money. I don't like it. That's just my personal preference. I just try to focus on what overwhelms me is what I can't control. I think it overwhelms a lot of people. That's why we all have anxiety these days. But focus on what we can control, and that's really aligned of teaching our children self-confidence and teaching them how to think. Because when they will be faced with this, you know, and there's just so much hate these days, and just teach, there's so much suicide these days, and kids are so mean, and people are mean, and I just want to teach my kids that it's okay to love yourself, to know what you're valued and what you're worth. And that you don't, just because someone says something doesn't mean that you have to invite that into your mind. And that is very hard. It's very, very hard for even me to do, because I'm kind of a hothead sometimes on things. But I'm really, really trying. As I get older, to take a deep breath, breathe, and think and process. And so I want my children to learn how to think.
And within the confidence building, you know, you're taking your son to work sites. So he's getting some experience within the job. Do you have other things that you're doing with him, or planned things? I know they're young, but you're going, hey, building confidence. Because you've got some of these things clearly, you know, a direction at least. You know, and young dads, you know, Trevor and I have had this kind of comment where we go, you know, we think we have it so planned out with how our map looks. And then, the map is not quite the accurate path of the journey. But, you know, what are the planned things you've got for your kids?
And so I'm going to go kind of probably detailed for you, and it's not so high level. I believe in modeling good things and good behavior. And so, but I also don't believe, I'll give you an example. My son's in T-ball right now, and he played a team two weeks ago that, like, every dad was on the field, like, every single like player, their dad was standing right next to him, telling him how to do it and stuff like that. And I see the benefit of that, but sometimes you just have to step back and let your child experience it and then tell you if they like it. So my son's summer's coming up, and my wife has him in like 10 different camps, because I want him to experience just different things to see what he likes, what he wants to do, you know, what he's interested in. And then once I learn those things, so like he likes baseball right now. So I take him to baseball games, because I want to model what great looks like, right? Because sometimes we as humans, like, we're given a task and then we don't know what good looks like or what to model. And so I just always want to model for my children, either in sports or personally, you know, what role model they should follow. right? So I'll give you a very specific example. Every night I try to relax. I don't sit at my computer, but I'll put my computer on my laptop and we'll watch TV together. And I watch Shark Tank. We watch Shark Tank. That's what we watch. Like I put it, he's like, Daddy, there's Shark Tank. He doesn't understand it, but he hears it. Trust me, he hears it. And, you know, and I said, hey, Dame, Mark Cuban just invested $100,000 into that company for 10%. He doesn't get that yet. But if he hears these things over and over and over, I don't want it to be like I'm brainwashing, but I want to teach him like the good things that I believe in life that are good, right? You know, holding the door open for someone when you're out in public, like just modeling good behavior, because our kids look up to us and our kids want to be like us. So if we model something good and we take them to a baseball game and they watch TV, they're going to be like, well, my dad watched this. And so I guess that's the way I look at it. That's what goes through my head. And now that's my view of the world as well. And I don't want to brainwash my kid into being a venture capitalist, but that's not a bad way to live. You know what I mean?
You want to show them that it's a thing you can do.
Yeah.
Well, you also started with having them be considerate. You know, the venture capital side, I mean, that's one of the paths they can choose. But I think, you know, the base steps, especially for kids, it's just getting those, you know, learning how to work with other people. If you're talking to be considerate, I mean, really that's working in teams. It's really what it is. You're very early starting how to work with other people so that you know you can be liked by other people, and then if you're liked by other people, they will bring you into opportunities, you know, that you can then you just say yes or no to, as a result of having more contacts, network, and people who you want to work with and have friends, you know, and social engagements with.
On a personal level, last comment is, or my only thought on this, and my wife and I are both we can be hot-headed about things, and so we stick to our guns, right? And we'll get into a heated debate, and it sounds like we're arguing, but we're not. But we also know that we are modeling for our children what's okay, because we know that a daughter, and I have a son and a daughter, and we know that a daughter, the way that I treat my wife is the way that my daughter is going to look at how a man should treat her. And that is incredibly, and my wife will say, hey, we need to hug. We need to get, you know, we need the children to see that, you know, and so that's another modeling thing. These are just the things that go through my head. And sometimes my wife and I get heated, is like, let's have this conversation later. Right. Because our children are watching us.
And how has that been for you on an education, self-education on how to be a dad?
We have gone to Brooks has been a little slow in some things. And so I'm just like, there's something wrong. We got to get it fixed, right? And so, like, I find, like, a speech therapist, and I find this, and that's why I've been learning a lot from them. They really, a lot of the speech therapists, they give you boundaries, and they give you a lot of things to read and take home. So I'm just, honestly, I model after people that are smarter than me, like certain types of therapists and stuff like that. And you know, and I'm trying to teach my son to go into some of these speech therapy clinics, and there will be children that, you know, that have issues, right? And he wants to stare, right? And I'm like, son, don't stare. You know, like, that's rude to do that. He's just curious. He just wants to know why do they look different? He doesn't mean anything negative by it. But, you know, I learned from, and I ask a lot of questions, like, how should I do this? Like, when Brooke says no and then does this, how am I supposed to respond after the 20th time with him ignoring me? How do I handle that as a father without getting mad? And you know, because I've done it the wrong way too. Trust me, I have.
We all have. It's the reason I'm asking.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of strategic parenting?
I have not.
It's a pretty cool, it popped into my Facebook feed once, and I paid like $20 for, you know, 20 emails about how to establish a no yelling household and how to get your kids to listen the first time. And it was really good. I recommend it at this point. Really good intel, and when practiced, useful.
I'll check that out. You know, when I asked you, Brandon, about that, this is for me very regular. You know, I mean, I'm learning daily how to interact with my kids, you know, and how and what they respond to, you know, to be effective. I'm also even learning how to kind of be available for other people's kids. You know, my sister and her kids come to the house. They're not my kids. You know, I'm maybe the host, you know, of the house, you know, but you know, if something's going on, you know, how do I address even with other people's kids? You know, and my family is, you know, one thing, but, you know, we're at the park and you see another kid doing something you don't like. I mean, there's a lot of
first time things that us as parents are going, hey, how do we address the thing?
How do you approach another child that's being mean to your child and know that their parents watching?
I think it's more about teaching your kid how to deal with
that's right, what you can control.
Than anything, exactly.
I agree with that. I guess my point is I'm learning. A lot of us, the first time we learn something is unfortunately the most important one. After it happens, you go, okay, no, I know how to handle
get it
this.
Now. That's right.
Yeah. But those first ones, I think, are the ones that I personally try to practice a lot of patience and just even response. I just go, hey, look, I didn't really need to like be.
It's emotional intelligence, Max. And I had to grow up a lot because my wife was a nanny for many years. And she's, when this stuff happened, she's like, Brandon, I told you this is what it's like to have children. I hear that all the time. No. And I think the most challenging is my wife and I both work from home. It's incredibly challenging. It is emotionally challenging. Like, she's like, I need to finish this appraisal real quick. So she's a real estate appraiser. And, and the kids want to go outside and do chalk on the driveway. And I'm like, I have to do this. Like, I'm learning how to be a dad, from other people. And I model what other people do. So like, I know that it works for me. And so that's why I try to say this works for me. Let me share that with my children. That's why I used that earlier. And I said that, and it's hard, Max. Like, I do not envy you right now. Honestly, I'm just being very upfront with having a little one. Like, I could not have had a third one. Like, I could not have had a third one. It was so hard on me. Our businesses are hard, Max. Being an entrepreneur is hard. It's high stress. And when you're up at 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. and the crying and the sensory overload is the way that I picture this is very difficult for me. And I have grown up so much. I'm very proud of myself. I've made a lot of mistakes, but my wife gets on me a lot. And that's why when I go to these therapy things, I ask them a lot of questions. How do I deal with this? How do I do this? How do I deal with this? Because they can give me insights that I just don't know.
So, question for both of you, for Trevor and for Brandon. So, do you guys ever wish that you could implement the efficiencies that you have as a parent when you were single?
Whoa. So,
because with what you're saying, Brandon, I feel the exact same way. I look back and I go, I'm so much more efficient with my time usage. I'm in bed early. I'm up way early. If I need to stay up late, I stay up late. There's no time to go out and do anything that's not related to being directly productive for work or being for my family. And I go, gosh, if I could have applied these skills in my 20s, where would I be right now in regards to, financial wealth? And, and it's hard to say because now it's like all my time is 100% occupied. But I go, man, I used to have a lot more time.
I'd say no. Yeah. Why regret it? What's the point in that?
I don't know if it's a regret. I guess it is for me. Yeah, you're right. I'm like, I wish I could go back.
On the one hand, and then two, I mean, think of like, we are biologically designed to want to just live long enough to watch our kids have kids. Right? Like, that's the path to happiness. That's why in your 20s, you're so focused on going out and meeting chicks because you're driven to do that. And then once you have that family life, then you're driven to just, provide or, maybe, at least it's the best option compared to like, messing up your relationship. So that's just life, man. And sometimes learn to be happy with it. Why,
some hormonal phases to our existence that matter for us actually having kids, I suppose, is in there.
That's it, man. Controlling your hormones and trying to get the mix right so you're happy.
That's a great question, Max. My wife and I traveled 4 times a year internationally. I mean, I don't regret that at all, man. I miss traveling so much. I mean, I get sometimes physically depressed because I can't get on an airplane for 12 hours and go somewhere. I miss that so much.
Yeah, the traveling for me is a big one. Brandon, I'm so sorry. Were you in Costa Rica 2 weeks ago?
I was in Costa Rica 2 weeks ago.
I was.
Brandon, you're like my soul brother, man. You don't even know it, dude. All these things you're saying, I'm like, I do that.
No. So both of you guys were at real estate conferences in Costa Rica at different locations 2 weeks ago. Because Trevor, I mentioned I had a buddy who was in Costa Rica. It was Brandon and his business partner Dwight. So what conference were you at?
Me?
No, both of you. Let's hear about these conferences. What were the, you guys both went to Costa Rica? I'm sure the listeners want to hear about this. What were each of them?
So I went to Kent Clothier. So it's called the Billionaire Boardroom. Now I'm not a billionaire, but it's just the level that we're in. And you remember when I talked earlier about living your life by design and doing life with people that believe what you believe and that are like you. There's probably, and you can bring your couple. It's designed to bring your kids and couples if you want. And we go to cool places. We stayed at the Four Seasons Hotel in Costa Rica. We flew from Dallas to Liberia, and it's about a 40-minute drive over. And you meet for about 4 hours a day. And then, you know, we took catamarans and jet skis, and we were swimming in the ocean. And, you know, we had lunch together. And then, like, you just hang out with like-minded people and talk business, talk real estate. And, you know, and one of the guys that's in our group just got done doing an ultra marathon, and he got up and talked about the mindfulness he had to have to like to withstand the pain of that and like how that affects you and how we can learn from that in business. And honestly, the big takeaway is, you know, and I believe this is our competition is just full of mediocrity. Is when life gets hard, our competition quits. And if you can just keep going at whatever level, it doesn't mean it has to be your 80 miles an hour, but it's you keep moving forward, you will excel past everybody. You just will. And again, it's about being around like-minded people. And so we do 6 events a year. We'll be in Hawaii in October. So 2 international trips a year, that's the billionaire. And then 4 more tactical, like you're in rooms and they call them hot seats. You get up and you talk about, like, this is the help I need in my business. This is what's going on. If I could solve this one problem, this is what I need help with, right? And it's very tactical. And then you get to hear other people and their problems. And then you can basically give into them and tell them what you've experienced and how you solved it. And then also know that we're not alone in this journey, that when we run into problems, we have people we can reach out to and call and say, hey, I'm stuck. I need help. And Max, that's how I met you.
I know. We met each other through Kent Clothier's boardroom, and I was in agreement. You know, I loved that program, and I was in a hot seat with Kent, and, you know, and we got a lot of really good, I'll call it painful questions of, you know, why aren't you doing that thing that you know will make you more successful, you know, which was really a benefit, you know. And the billionaires group, yeah, I you know, that was really what I wanted to join when I went to that event, you know, where we met. So, and Trevor, your event, Costa Rica also.
Yeah, it was similar to what Brandon just described, or both of you. It was a small group mastermind. There was 15 of us there. Brought my wife, brought my kids. Business partner came, wife and their kids. And we visited 3 different large Airbnbs. We spent 2 days at each one. And we would do excursions. They fed us. It was all in kind of like an all-inclusive thing. Usually a couple people a day in the group would do a business breakdown where they would just explain their business, their biggest problem, and then everyone else would, you know, kind of pontificate on how to solve it. And it was really helpful. It was actually the first time I've had that where I got to be in a hot seat and really just kind of lay out, here's the biggest challenges I'm facing, and got some really freaking great actionable ideas out of it. In fact, one of those is the reason that I'm in Scottsdale right now, meeting up with the Clever Investor team to work on some prospective business projects, which one of Cody Sperber's business partners was there, and so kind of got to make that connection at the same time. He was like, I can solve your problems, basically. Like, or I have some solutions, and it would be beneficial for both of us. So yeah, that was it. It was freaking awesome.
It's about compressing time, Max. This is all about compressing time. And if we can share, and I love doing it, like if we can all share with each other how to get further faster, we're all going to win together.
Team sport.
Team sport. And I've learned that in multifamily and commercial. And that's what I love about it too. Love it.
So yeah, there's so many, you know, it's so interesting, Brandon. I've got a couple things I'm going to have to call you up on after this, on a couple different business opportunities that I'm realizing we've touched on here. Are you actually available? You're about 30 minutes.
I'm completely booked today. I have availability tomorrow.
Okay, I'll text you.
Just text me, and we could talk on the weekends too. Like, I love these, you know.
Yeah, no, well, I've got one that's a, I've got someone who's looking to invest in a business, and they're looking for an investment. And when you mentioned what you're looking at putting in, it actually might fit for you. So I was like, oh, I'll put you in contact with this guy.
If I can just touch on that, we're looking
sure.
for, so sometimes we're good at marketing and acquisitions, and not all deal is syndication worthy and fund worthy. And I've learned that's the way I analyze certain deals. And so sometimes I like to work with a JV partner, you know, if I only need 250,000 or 200,000 or whatever. Sometimes I like to go in JV, and it's like, you know, I always thought when I started this, and I'll probably will do this one day. In fact, I know I will do this. I would always think, if I could just have a money partner that put up the money, I'll do all the work. We split the profits. And it's like, I want to do that when I get older with people. So I love JV opportunities and stuff like that.
Soulmates or soul brother.
It's like I don't make a penny until you make a penny. But at the end of the day, like I love JV partnerships because it's smaller and there's one person you got to call and you get to know them and you can then live life with that person too and help them grow financially.
So Brandon, we're here at the end of this. How do people get in contact with you?
Yeah. So thank you for that. So you can find me on obviously Facebook. I'm on Instagram. Basic Cashflow Teacher is my, so I'm really, really passionate about teaching people about cash flow.
And let's spell that out because it doesn't always sound as easy as it.
Yeah. So it's B as in boy, A-C-H-I-K _cash_flow_teacher. That's Instagram. Great. And then, Facebook, I believe, is just /cashflowteacher. My email is brandon@simplehousecapital.com.
Great. So we're going to have all those contact links also on our Real Estate Dads podcast website, where you can get in contact with Brandon and get a link to this episode. And also a location where if you want to join our Slack channel, you'll be able to network with other dads who are in the real estate industry, where we both will have an ability to both put up deals for raising of capital and network with other guys if you've got deals that need capital. So connect with us there. If you also know of anyone who could be a great guest for this show, who could be someone who has a fantastic story about fatherhood, something they overcame, where they came from, and where they are in their real estate journey, go to our website and fill out an application. We'd love to have you on the show. Brandon, thanks so much for being so honest with us here.
Sorry I cried.
I love that you did. You know, I mean, the reason I do is because, you know, and this is the community service note of this podcast. You're not alone, dude. You're not alone. There are lots of things I can think of where I go, you know, I wish I had that thing. You know, and for me, I'm a happy crier for movies. When the person does the thing.
Yeah.
That's when I get choked up. So, you know, and when you say that, you know, that's really what I see. You know, so no, I'm glad you were honest and you're not alone. And the guys who are listening to this, I know that also, that there are people going, I want to do better for my kids than what was not given to me.
You're going to have to, after a year or two, do like a guy's retreat and tell everybody that we're hosts, like myself and you guys, and we'll fly to Costa Rica together or something and just have like a big dad's retreat.
Nailed it on the head. And, you know, and that's really what the community.
Can we bring our kids?
Yeah.
No. Just the guys, right?
Just the guys. Guys.
We could do both. We could do a Costa Rica 2 weeks, and then there's like a 3-night period where it's just the guys.
That's right.
And you know, the community that we're building here is intended for that. We want a community of guys who are dedicated real estate professionals and dedicated fathers. You know, that's the goal of this. So, and it's been a fantastic journey kind of creating some of those episodes, but also really, Brandon, every guest we've had, it's been such a great ability to build rapport and get some, you know, great wisdom from guys who have it. So thank you for being on.
No, thank you for thinking of me. Appreciate you, Trevor. Nice to meet you, man.
You too, Brandon. Look forward to running into you again.